From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Despite the fact that Islamic State forces have retreated, the complicated war in Syria appears to be expanding rather than wrapping up. The United States is under fire this week for an attack in eastern Syria that at first reportedly killed about 100 Syrian national soldiers loyal to President Bashar al-Assad. Now it has emerged that several, possibly dozens, of Russian fighters are among the dead. Meanwhile, the Syrian Air Force reportedly shot down an Israeli fighter jet in recent days, saying that it was responding to an Israeli incursion. The clash came after Israel shot down an Iranian drone in Syrian airspace. According to Syrian sources, Israel has also tried to raid Syrian military bases. And Turkey has continued its targeting of Kurdish communities in northern Syria's newly liberated areas as well. Instead of the Syrian war winding down, there seems to be an escalation involving an ever-growing number of countries. My guest is Dr. Stephen Zunis, a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as a coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies, and he's a senior policy analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus, a project of the Institute for Policy Studies, and associate editor of Peace Review. He's a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Great to be with you.
So, Stephen, first let's talk about why the situation with the U.S. bombing in Syria that killed so many Syrian fighters and possibly Russian fighters is so poorly understood. The news reports that I was reading use terms like the fog of war. It's not clear. There seems to be very little information about what actually happened on this attack that took place February 7th or 8th.
Well, it appears that both Turkish and Syrian forces are trying to move in on areas liberated by the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces, which is a coalition the United States has been supporting, composed primarily of the leftist Kurdish YPG. And the United States has done a little finger wagging, but has not countered the Turkish assault on the Kurdish-controlled areas. But when there was some apparent shelling of a SDF base in which there are some U.S. personnel nearby, the United States brought in airstrikes and attacked the forces that were allegedly attacking this base. The Russians present, according to Moscow, were not Russian forces per se, but of a mercenary group. And the Moscow, the Russian government claimed they did not even know of their presence there. I kind of doubt that last point, but it is very possible that they were not Russian soldiers, but Russian mercenaries, because they, like us, have these Blackwater type groups that are private contractors to support their Middle Eastern allies.
It reminds me a little bit of what had happened several years ago in Ukraine with these mercenaries from Russia that had a fast and loose connection to the Russian government, and the Russian government liked it that way because it gave them this plausible deniability. Is that something of the sort of what's happening in Syria? Although we know, of course, that Russia has been openly fighting an air war alongside Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, but are ground forces playing this murky role where they're not clearly identified as Russian soldiers of the Russian government?
Well, there are Russian soldiers on the ground at various Syrian military bases. I doubt they would have them in forward positions like this. These are indeed very likely mercenaries. But regardless, it is a dangerous escalation. I mean, when you think about it, in the during the 45 years of the Cold War, with the Cuban Missile Crisis, with the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, with the U.S. invasion of Vietnam, you know, the literally millions of people that died in these proxy wars between the United States and Soviet Russia, not a single Russian was killed by an American or a single American killed by a Russian.
Right.
And yet here we are over a quarter century after the end of the Cold War, and now it appears that Americans are killing Russians.
How has the Russian government responded, given that it may not want to admit that there are Russian mercenaries on the ground?
Well, obviously, they're upset that the United States still has a military presence there. In fact, a lot of us are upset that the United States still has a military presence there. I mean, the whole goal was to help the Syrian Democratic Forces defeat ISIS. That has largely been accomplished. At this point, it was assumed that the a few hundred American troops that were there would withdraw, but instead are up to 2,000 and maybe as many as 5,000 American troops in this area of Syria. And they apparently are planning to stay there. According to the Pentagon, they will be there to try to serve as pressure to curb Iranian influence and push for a negotiated settlement. Now, obviously, there are reasons to oppose Iran's presence in Syria, the reasons to oppose the Assad regime and the horrific war crimes they have committed against their own people. But this is Syrian territory. Illegally, the United States has no right to be on Syrian soil. And it establishes a very dangerous precedent for the United States to go to a foreign country without invitation, have its troops there, and to be there as pressure to change certain government policy.
Now, in this attack that we are discussing, where many Syrian soldiers were killed and now we know some Russians were killed, the United States, as you said earlier, was responding to a call by Kurdish forces who felt that they were under attack. How does this play with Turkey's targeting of Kurdish forces? Was this in a different area than the area that Turkey has been targeting Kurdish forces, or was it around in the the same area?
It was a different area, but the differing U.S. responses are quite revealing. The area of the attack to which the U.S. responded is sparsely populated, but it has quite a bit of oil resources.
These are
the
Deir al-Zor, right?
The oil that ISIS at one time was pumping and selling on the black market to help finance their operations when they served a quasi-governmental role in areas where they control. The Turkish attacks are in more heavily populated areas. In fact, they are killing a fairly large number of civilians, and yet the United States has not responded. In this case, Turkey, of course, is a NATO ally of the United States. The overwhelming majority of their equipment is U.S. made, as is a large percentage of the YPG SDF forces. So we have yet another case of both soldiers and civilians dying by U.S. Made weapons that are being supplied to both sides.
So the U.S. will defend Kurds when it suits them, it seems like.
This has been the history for decades. Yeah. I mean, it's been the classic case of good Kurds, bad Kurds. Mm-hmm. The Kurds fighting Saddam were freedom fighters. The Kurds just across the border in Turkey that were fighting the Ankara regime were terrorists. I mean, the Kurds have been used as political pawns by the United States and other countries for many, many decades.
How has the Syrian government responded to what the U.S. did? I mean, we're talking about Russian mercenaries being killed, but Syrian soldiers were killed. You mentioned earlier that Assad has dealt with the U.S. presence in his country, even though the U.S. doesn't technically have the right to be there. But is this attack a potential turning point, given how many Syrian soldiers were killed?
It's hard to say. I mean, the Syrian armed forces have had huge losses, primarily from the various guerrilla groups that they have been fighting for nearly 7 years. They've found there have been violations of their territorial integrity by a number of other countries. Israel, of course, has occupied the southwestern part of Syria ever since 1967. So it's hard to imagine making a huge difference given what they've gone through already. At the same time, because the Syrian regime has so little legitimacy in the eyes of the international community, because of the enormous atrocities committed against his own people. His call for adherence to international law and the like isn't getting a lot of sympathy in many quarters, right, even among those who, of course, are skeptical of U.S. rule.
But Russia and Iran have been the main foreign allies of Assad, right? So he sort of has their allegiance.
Oh, yeah, yes. I find it very doubtful that Assad would still be in power were it not for the support for of Russia and Iran and allied militias such as the Lebanese Hezbollah. But of course, you could say the same thing for the various dictatorships the United States has propped up over the years when they have similarly oppressed their own people.
And when we hear of the U.S.-led coalition in Syria, what does that actually mean, Stephen? Who is the U.S.? I'm assuming Turkey is part of that coalition, but who else is in that coalition?
Except, of course, you know, the these coalition partners are fighting each other. Even putting aside the legal questions, it does raise concerns that given that there's so many different parties with guns that have their own interest, that it is a continued U.S. military presence, continuing to pour arms into the area. Is it actually doing any good as opposed to just making it possible for more people to kill each other? I mean, the ideologically, it seems to be a very odd mix. You have a secular dictatorship like Assad, like Assad's Ba'ath Party, allying with these hardcore Shia, sectarian Shia groups like Hezbollah and the Iranian mullahs. You have the YPG, which is a decidedly leftist group. That was at one time Marxist-Leninist, but now it's leaning more in anarchist direction, inspired by Murray Bookchin and other more libertarian socialists, aligning with the United States. I mean, you know, it is a very weird mix of parties within these coalitions, and even with a scorecard, it's hard to keep track.
Yeah. So we haven't even talked about Israel. Let's talk about that now. What is Israel's interest in Syria? I'm assuming it has something to do with Iran. And is it true that Israel is literally raiding or attempting to raid military bases inside Syria, meaning it is carrying out incursions in both on land and Syrian airspace?
Well, first of all, again, let's remember that Israel has occupied most of the Golan province in southwestern Syria ever since 1967. And with U.S. encouragement, rebuked peace efforts by Assad back in 2007 when they offered a permanent peace treaty and security guarantees and full diplomatic and economic relations in return for an Israeli withdrawal from the occupied territory. But in addition to that, Israel did launch a whole series of raids this past week in Syria. The first was a targeted raid against an Iranian base when an Iranian drone strayed into Israeli airspace. One of the Israeli planes.
So the Iranian drone was actually on Israeli airspace rather than Syrian airspace when it was shot down.
The drone was apparently. The fighter plane, however, the Israeli fighter plane was shot down over Syrian airspace. It crash landed inside Israel, but it was hit over Syrian airspace. And of course, in any country, if you're being bombed, obviously you have a right to shoot down an airplane that's bombing you. But in retaliation for this, Israel then launched a massive assault against over a half dozen Syrian military targets in various parts of the country, the heaviest bombing of that country by Israel since the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. This does mark a rather dramatic escalation in Israel's involvement in the conflict, which until now has been fairly limited.
Right. And I'm assuming the F-16 fighter jet that was shot down was an American-made piece of equipment?
Oh, certainly. F-16s are of American manufacture. The vast majority of Israel's equipment is American. Virtually all U.S. foreign aid to Israel is in the form of U.S. military equipment. In other words, the massive amounts of money we don't give to Israel per se is basically a subsidy for our McDonnell Douglas, Lockheed Martin, and other military contractors.
Right. So was it naive to expect that with the retreat of Islamic State forces, the Syrian war would wind down? I mean, of course, accepting that Bashar al-Assad's attacks on his own people were separate from the Islamic State's attempts to take over parts of Syria, but at least that part of the war should have been winding down with the Islamic State and retreat. But it hasn't.
I know. And the fighting the Islamic State, which given its extreme brutality and totalitarian fanaticism, was one that led even many people who are generally skeptical about U.S. intervention to say, well, maybe this is one case where it could be justifiable. This appears now to have been a foot in the door. To bring U.S. troops into Syria to try to impose, through this military presence, some kind of leverage to enforce a settlement that the United States wants to impose. And again, even those of us who have been highly critical of the Assad regime and the terror that it has inflicted on the Syrian people, have serious reasons to be skeptical about what the U.S. has in mind there. Again, not just on the legal grounds, but politically as well. And just for example, it appears that John Hanna is going to be named the U.S. Special Envoy on Syria. To try to take the leading role in possible peace talks. But Hanna, you may recall, was the chief foreign policy advisor for Dick Cheney. He was a big promoter of the invasion and occupation of Iraq. He strongly supports Israel's occupation, continued occupation, annexation of southwestern Syria. I mean, this guy really has no credibility as an honest broker, as a peacemaker, as a negotiator of any kind. And so the leverage that the U.S. Is trying to impose by its continued military presence is not for the sake of peace or human rights, defending the Syrian people, bringing peace or anything like that. I think it is yet another effort at U.S. hegemony in an area where it's already such a mess, so complicated, such efforts are only going to make things worse.
Now, under Obama, the U.S. was reluctant, or at least on the surface, reluctant to enter a Syrian war on the Syrian government over Assad's attacks on his people, but then used the excuse of the Islamic State to enter the war, saying it was only targeting the Islamic State. It seems as though the change under Trump is that the war in Syria has had an expanded scope now, and the U.S., in addition to the ongoing war in Afghanistan and support for the war against Yemen with Saudi forces, is and some continued war fighting in Iraq, is now establishing a proper war, if you will, in Syria? Or does Trump, as far as you can tell, have any end in sight? I know he doesn't like to share plans because somehow he thinks that's giving the enemy too much information. But what would the end goal of the U.S. and Syria be in this scenario?
It's not really clear. And this is another disturbing aspect of all this. I mean, the irony, of course, is that Trump campaign to Hillary Clinton's left.
Yes, on war, exactly.
You're getting too much involved in these wars. He disingenuously claimed that he had opposed the war in Iraq. And indeed, the polls show that the districts that had the biggest shift from Obama to Trump were districts that had the highest casualty rates from Iraq and Afghanistan. In other words, Trump, in addition to a number of other factors in a very close election, Trump's election could be attributed in large part to Hillary Clinton's hawkishness and his claim that he would be more moderate. But in fact, as we're seeing, just as a lot of his other promises of being tough on Wall Street and supporting working class Americans, he's doing just the opposite. He is escalating the U.S. Role, escalating U.S. intervention, not just beyond what Obama was doing, but beyond what the more hawkish Hillary Clinton would have likely done. And indeed, you know, we're getting to Bush level areas of this kind of weird neoconservative view that the United States somehow has the right to impose its order throughout the Middle East, regardless of the legal, political or humanitarian consequences.
Well, Stephen, the military budget that Trump has put forward, or the entire government budget that significantly boosts the military spending, seems to be very much in line with a vision for expanding war. And when we look at all of the various countries that are involved now, with Syria at the center, it's very troubling. I mean, just to go through all of the countries and the various forces, you've got Syria, Iran, Russia, Kurdish communities, Turkey, the United States, and ISIS, and Israel. So this, to me, I mean, I don't know if I'm being unusually pessimistic here, but when we think about the definition of a world war, it's essentially one where there are multiple and growing numbers of countries that are involved in a war that has no end in sight. Am I being too pessimistic here?
Unfortunately, I think you're being pretty accurate, and it kind of reminds me of the African proverb, mm-hmm. when elephants fight, the grass gets trampled. Hmm. Lost in all this is the Syrian people, yes. who are only going to continue to die in ever greater numbers as this conflict continues to be internationalized.
Right. I mean, and the refugee crisis that has emerged from this war is also in line with the hallmarks of a world war, an unprecedented refugee crisis. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's really tragic because as someone who's been to Syria a number of times, prior to the war, I mean, yes, the Assad regime was quite corrupt and authoritarian and everything like that, but it was a peaceful, stable country where people's basic needs were being met. And it's so tragic to see it turn into this kind of failed state with so much death and destruction and human suffering.
Well, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us, Stephen. And I'm sure we'll have you back on to talk about this and other aspects of the Middle East. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He's also senior policy analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus and an associate editor of Peace Review. We've been discussing the ever-expanding war in Syria. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.